This doesn't work in big organizations. Big organizations are different. So I was really happy to run into a little Woodward, who was working in IBM, but not in software, but working in this giant organization and creating this level of innovation, enthusiasm, activity in a huge, huge organization. So let's hear from one person.
So I have a question. Who in here has ever heard of IBM? That's what I thought. And who in here knows somebody who works for IBM? I'm surprised there aren't more. There are a lot of us out there. I have to tell you, I actually never dreamed I would be working for IBM. Now, I don't know what your thoughts around IBM are, but I distinctly remember when I was a junior and I started looking at the career guides, I remember going through this thick, glossy book where all of the companies talked about how great they were, and I saw a page on IBM, and I thought, wow, I will never, ever, ever work for a corporation that's that huge and, so impersonal and, oh, bureaucracy, whatever. That's not who I am. So I went to work for a university out in California. And, there came a time where I decided I wanted to move to Texas to be closer to family. And I had been managing Unix systems development. Those are large-scale computer systems at the university, working with energetic jazz students and creating these innovative solutions. And it was a really powerful place to be. I really loved it. But I wanted to move back to Texas. And I interviewed with the company. And it turns out I was actually tricked into working for IBM. On my own, I probably never would have. But I was interviewed, and during the interview, I met, these are folks at Tivoli, I met some folks that were just, really excited. They were not wearing blue suits with a stiff white shirt. They were wearing jeans, they were comfortable, and they were very, very closely collaborating and solving cool problems. And in fact, during my interview, we rolled up sleeves and we got in there and we started developing stuff together. And I thought, wow, this is such a cool place with amazing people working on interesting stuff. Well, Tivoli had been acquired by IBM, so they were an IBM company, and thus I became an IBMer. That's how that happened. IBM is probably every bit as large as you can possibly imagine. There are about 400,000 of us in this world. 400,000. How big is that? We have more people in IBM than each of 50 different countries in this world. It's huge. If you take the 20 least populated countries and you group them all together, there would still be more IBMers than 20 of those combined. It's crazy. And it can be. It can be, as you can imagine. It could be a very impersonal, disconnected. It could be a very disconnected place to work with that many people out there, that many colleagues. I learned very quickly that there's also a lot of power in that. Now, I remember I was working on a patent, and I needed help with RFID. There was this little piece of what I was working on, and I didn't know all of the details, but I did know that there is somebody out there, out of 399,999 other people, one of them probably knows. So I got into the corporate directory, and I found a guy in Ireland, Dublin, Ireland, working at a lab, and I said, hey, I'm doing this, and I'm having some issues. How about we get together? And he said, sure. And so we made a connection. We actually kept in touch, get to know each other a bit better. So it doesn't have to be impersonal. But it is. It's huge. And the groups that I'm with Quality Software Engineering. We're responsible for helping teams worldwide to improve on their software development practices. So I am in software, just, not exactly directly. I'm not producing software. There are 13 of us, including our director, responsible for helping teams worldwide to improve their practices. We're responsible. I'm under corporate. We're part of the innovation and technology department. And we are responsible for helping teams to innovate on their practices to improve. And so if you look within IBM, it's incredibly diverse. We have people that are doing application development, developing one thing for a client. We have people working on huge, enormous products. We have people in 170 different countries in the world speaking different languages, different cultures. You know, how on earth is a group of 13 people, including a director, how are we going to make change happen or help change, foster change to happen in this sort of an environment? And the way we do that, we learn very quickly, we work with community. And what we do, we have a group right now, there are almost 8,400 people in the direct community that we work with. These are people from all over the world that volunteer their time to participate in this community. Nobody is paying them to be part of this community. It's not part of their day job. This is an extracurricular activity. And yet, we have people from all over the world donating their time to be part of it. In fact, just the week before last, we did a call for participation for a work group to solve a problem. As you can imagine, if we have a problem, there are lots of people out there who have experienced it and have solutions. We did a call for participation that had 12 slots, and we had 500 people volunteer. They wanted to be a part of it. And, at the very least, we typically have 10 times as many people want to be a part of this volunteer organization working together to solve problems. How does that work? How do you get people to volunteer on this particular one, the one with 500 volunteers? They were volunteering 1 to 2 hours a week of their time for a period of 3 months. How do you do that? How do you get people to just say, I know, I want to give up my lunch and I want to do extra stuff that kind of looks like work but isn't really? Well, the first thing that we do is we look at the problems. We want to make sure that we are focused on the problems that are going to provide the most benefit and the most value to the people that are in our software engineering, software development community. And the only way that we can do that is by communicating very directly with them and understanding what their needs are. A community is not just a distribution list with a whole bunch of names on it, and it's not how many people have friended you. It's the people who have bonds and connections. They have to know them. They have to know who each of the members are, and they have to have a common purpose and a common bond. So what we do is we send surveys out, and we ask people. We ask them, what is the greatest challenge you're facing? What is your biggest problem? What would you like for us to work together to do as a community? And we want to understand who is it. What are you? What is your role? What is your world like? What is your experience at work? Who are you? What is it that you're trying to accomplish? What do you need? What do you need? What are you trying to do? What are you trying to do differently? And why? And then we ask four more whys on top of that. You get to those others. Why? Why is this important to you? Why do you need to do this? Because we really want to understand the problems and needs of the community. If we can focus on that, we know that we're hitting the things that are going to be of most value and of most interest to the people in our community. So it's about conversation. It's not just a checkbox, survey that says, do you care about X? Do you care about Y? We have open-ended feedback, which means we have to read and go through that open-ended feedback. But it's amazing what you learn when people share their experiences with you, through this open text. And it's not just surveys. We directly get out and we communicate with the people in the community and we ask, them to share their problems. Who needs to do what and why? It's incredibly powerful. In fact, Mike Cohen has written a book on user stories. That's the format of this thing called a user story. And who needs to do what and why? Now, we don't only focus on the people in the community. Those are kind of the end users for us. We want to make sure that we are communicating out with the different groups of people that we work with. I can't tell you for each of your, you know, worlds what those different categories are, but I can tell you that there is a technique that looks at four different categories. The first one is principals. Those are the people that control your budget. You want to understand their stories, what they need, what they consider valuable. They control the budget and the purse strings. The second is insiders. Now, you have change. You're trying to make change happen. You're trying to solve a problem. But you need to understand what impact your great idea is going to have on other people. My husband, who worked for a free store for a number of years, and he did an online store. And what he did was they were working on making product available to the sales guys so that they could very quickly get the product out to their clients. So great, you know, he's putting together the sales store. You know, yes, the salespeople are going to be very happy, but he was smart enough to realize that he needed to get in touch with the people that are actually going to fulfill the orders. Because if he hadn't included the people that were going to fulfill the orders, they might have been overwhelmed by the process, and then the sales guys would not be happy, or they'd be much less happy because they wouldn't get the product quite as quickly. So insiders, they're very important. Partners, they're the people that are going to help you to get your product or your solution out. And then end users, you know, those are the people that we commonly ask. But it's important that you look at the different groups of people that are going to be impacted by this, you know, problem area, by this solution, who's going to be impacted, and understand what their needs are. We need to understand across the board. And it's important that we not just listen to the people that give us the information that we expect to hear or want to hear or would like to hear. We have to listen to the people that may have divergent opinions. They may actually get in the way of the work that you're doing because they don't feel like it's something that should be done. Much better to get them engaged early on, understand what the challenges for them are, and look at bringing them in so they're a part of the solution that you're trying to develop. So what we do is we bring together people, we understand the needs, and we prioritize those. We understand who they are, we understand their needs, prioritize, and then the next step is to find the people who are going to work on those problems. And we have lots of people from all over IBM. We send out calls for participation and get people to participate. The way we do that, first of all, I just said, it's a problem that people care about and that they're passionate about, right? So we know it's a space that they're interested in. But the next thing is to find, you know, how are we going to motivate them to participate? Well, what we do is we try really hard to understand where they're coming from, what their perspectives are, and what they have to offer. It's very important for us to make a connection with the people in the community. So when we send out that survey and we say, what are your problems? We're also asking them, tell us a little bit about yourself. Now, what are you really good at? Now, where do you feel like you have some, you know, some things that you can improve on? What are your skills? And we ask the people in the community, you know, what kinds of things they are really interested in and care about. So what we do is we try to look at, you know, what their skills are, what their interests are. We also look at the things that might, there's a recognition piece of it that's really important. Whenever people come in and they get involved with the community activities, they know that they're going to be recognized in some way. We have newsletters that go out that have their pictures in it. that have descriptions of what they did. That goes out to the broader group of 8,000 people. They have opportunities. We will often work with them to take their work and make it available externally as publications. So if you participate in our work group, if you engage, we're going to help you to become published. Now, maybe that's of interest to you, maybe it's not. But there are, I know that the team recently worked together with volunteers, and we were able to publish a book by the community working together. It's IBM's first community-developed book. We bring people together, they share their experiences, they share their stories of what they've experienced in their world, what's gone well, what hasn't gone well. They communicate, and we look for those things that are, solutions that are better than what anyone would have brought to the table. So that's, we look for, there's recognition. There are the other opportunities, like becoming a published author. There's inventions, having your name on an invention. Making the world a better place. How can my sharing my experience make the world a better place? Well, again, we talked about the book a moment ago. All of those proceeds are going to charity. So nobody is benefiting monetarily from having done this, but they all have an opportunity to choose what charity is going to benefit from this. So it becomes, different ways of making a difference in the world beyond just the day job piece of it. Okay, so we have the right people focused on the right problems. Then the next thing that we do is we make sure that we're delivering value in 2-week blocks of time. That is so important. How many projects have you ever known that you start off and everybody's excited, the worker's going, yes, we're going to accomplish great things, and then as time goes on, it sort of unravels and fizzles and you lose your momentum and motivation. Well, what we do is that we make sure that we break that project up into small pieces, that the volunteers are breaking this up into the pieces that they think they can get done in 2-week pieces. So every 2 weeks, they're getting together and they're delivering some sort of value. For example, when we're talking about this book that's in an innovative space, every 2 weeks, they're delivering a draft or a chapter. It goes back out to the community. The community then provides feedback on this material. It's incorporated, and they continue to improve and evolve. So delivering in 2-week chunks, those are very much like the short-term wins that John P. Cotter recommends for change transformation. Every 2 weeks, you want to show some sort of value. And, again, it goes back out to the community, so we get to hear where there's opportunity for improvement, and that gets taken in. We also take a look and see what our prioritization was, and does it still make sense for us to have that prioritization? Maybe we need to adjust. A few years ago, we were working on a project that we started in perfect alignment with our software engineering community, the broader group of software engineers. We had a project that was in play. We had volunteers. We knew exactly where we were going. And we started going down that path towards that target. And sure enough, other people in the community, we had certain groups that said, wait, it's not working. And we said, I'm sorry, there's our target. We're headed. And on this side, no, you don't understand, it's not working well. If you did it the way we said, surely it would be fine. Headed for the target, it was rather disastrous. Because we hit the target, but it shouldn't have been there anymore. We should have shifted the target over. So we make sure, very, very sure, that every couple of weeks we're looking at, are we really headed in the right direction? Is this really where we should be going? Maybe it is. Maybe the long-term vision is good, but maybe it's not. And if it's not, we want to know now and not after we've gotten there and realize that there are a lot of unhappy people in the world. So, reevaluating. I think, the funny thing about a vision, is the, you know, a lot of talk about, you know, having this vision and establishing the vision and what is your vision. And what I think is really important for the work that, you know, I think a lot of us do is turning that into your vision. Your vision. And you may have a picture, but it's important to ask the people, your stakeholders, you know, to refine that vision and to help you to establish the right vision. It's okay to have an initial idea, but I think that by including, you know, the thoughts and experiences of others, you can come up with something that is better than anyone brings to the table. So the vision, to be successful, I don't think it's so much, you know, how are you going to establish your vision? How are you going to accomplish your vision? But, you know, how do I take that and turn it into our vision? And that is going to mean it's going to change, and that's not a bad thing. It's a good thing, you know, because you're hopefully just improving upon what you had in mind. So it's every 2 weeks, deliver value. Every 2 weeks, take a look. Are we still headed to the right place? And look for ways that you can improve. And we look for things. Are we communicating effectively? Is there a better way? With so many different sub-teams running and different, you know, groups focusing on different problems, my team's job, as QSC staff, it becomes making more of the connections. You know, this group has tried this and it's really worked. How about if we try that over here? Oh, this has worked here. Why don't we try it over here? And really bringing people together, you know, in those different groups, giving them the environment and the infrastructure and what they need to solve the problems. And oftentimes, you know, different people have had different experiences, and all we do is provide the infrastructure, provide them with a good facilitator, select a good facilitator, so they can bring it together and create that solution that will benefit teams all over IBM. So, you know, I think that structure, again, the structure, understand the needs, listen to the stories, listen to the experiences, create your backlog, make sure, or, you know, your list of things to do, prioritize it, take the highest priority, work off, have fantastic people grouped together, work for a couple of weeks, deliver results, evaluate, and improve. That's a very, very powerful pattern. We have, I mentioned the book, but we've also, last November, we did a conference, a virtual conference, that was entirely run by volunteers. We had 13 people from all over the world participate in the global conference. We hit 26 different countries, and you know, it was all volunteer presenters, volunteer people handling the questions and answers. It was volunteers handling telephones. Everything you can imagine about a conference was run by people who were just very passionate about hearing the experiences and stories from other people through this conference, wanted to understand it, wanted to be a part of it. We had the 26 countries, as I said, for the global conference, but we also had people in local places creating their own little local conferences at the same time. So in 33 different sites, 23 different countries, there were groups of volunteers hosting these live face-to-face conferences. Again, because they were passionate about sharing, solving the problem together, and sharing experiences. So that was one. We also developed a test curriculum, a curriculum for testing a while back. And again, that was by bringing together volunteers, providing them with the infrastructure, and they ran with this developing an education curriculum. And that curriculum ended up resulting in a couple of patents. It also ended up increasing productivity by IBM by several million dollars. And with the state of Arizona, we ended up getting a grant through the Department of Labor to create an education curriculum based on it for Arizona universities. And the cool thing about that was, too, that it benefited university students and those university students might actually someday become IBMers, so they were trained up. it was really fantastic. So I think there's a lot that can be done by volunteers and by listening to the stories of their problems and also the experiences and how they solved those problems. Doing that with collaboration, I think, or we've seen over and over again, produces innovative results. Any questions? Yes.
Elizabeth, I'm interested. Are these volunteers actually given time off so they work full-time on these problems?
They're not. No. Within IBM, we do have a program called Blue Opportunities where you can create these sorts of opportunities. We don't. We actually ask for people to just volunteer, you know, for a certain amount of time, 1 to 2 hours a week is typical. And we give them some general guidelines based on the problems that we've heard. But no, it's they're volunteering this out of their time. Usually it's a lunch, you know, lunch here and there. Yeah.
Do you have a facilitator for each of these project teams that get going? And is it a volunteer facilitator? And how do you choose a facilitator if you have one?
Okay, so there are times when two of these staffers, full-time paid people, mm-hmm. serve as facilitators for these groups. But I think the cornerstone and the real success story is when we take people that who were brand new and have participated in the community, and we are able to grow them into an effective facilitator. That is, for me personally, that's tremendous success. I have a guy right now that he started with us 2 years ago. He's a user experience guy, not necessarily a high-ranking guy in IBM, but he passionately cares about this particular topic, and he also cares about the people. And I think that facilitator gene, you know, you're trying to bring out the best in each person around you. You're trying to get them to connect, not just on a let's solve this problem and check off task basis, but for them to be a really good team, they have to be able to connect. And he's been able to do a really phenomenal job of getting them to connect. So this, the project that he's working on right now, this is the first time he has ever facilitated a global team. And he's doing an amazing job. He's also up for promotion as a result. And so personally, for me and for other people on our staff, that's the sort of thing we want to see. Yeah, they gave us an hour or two of lunch. Yeah, that's great for IBM. But we really want to see this make a difference in their lives. That's what we're looking for.
Any questions? So it seems like building communities and using them as part of your culture, your corporate culture. And so is there an expectation when you come in as a new employee that even though these are voluntary, that this is really how you get ahead by connecting through these communities? Is there a recognition of that?
You know what? No, there really isn't. Now, what you'll see is that in order to get promoted, you need to have leadership opportunities. You need to have those opportunities to work with global teams. You need a chance to demonstrate that you have some of those, you know, the higher level facilitation organization, bringing people together kinds of skills, or, you know, deep technical skills. You have to have those opportunities. And that's, I think, one of the really cool things about what we do is provide those opportunities. So, yes, with your day job, it is possible to do that. It's entirely possible to do that. But we're just in a really unique position to be able to provide that to a lot of people.
So is there recognition at the management executive level that this type of structure within the organization is very important to the culture?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. There is recognition, and there's, you'll hear the...
Well, you mentioned the recognition within, like, people, contributors to the community, but is, at the executive level, are they, you know, you're putting resources toward this, even though the participants are
absolutely. Voluntary. Yeah, absolutely. So here's the neat thing. When we're looking at the problem that we're going to solve, you know, I mentioned... There were a couple of things I mentioned. one is that we look at what are the outcomes that you expect from this. You know, what does success look like to you? If we were to solve this problem, how would your world look different? And that's important because it's not enough to say we're going to change this. You have to say, what is the value that's going to come out of it? You know, I remember I was working on a virtual conference project some time ago, and I had a VP that I was working with a client, and we were talking about the different aspects of a virtual conference. You know, well, you have to have telephone lines, we're going to make a way for you to present your PowerPoint, you know, talking about it at that level, and it was going so well. And I thought, yes, you know, we won this deal, yeah. And there was at the end, there's a wall of silence. And the VP said, so what would it take to make you a hero to the client? And I went, oh, this is so touchy-feely, you know? What would it take to make you a hero? Ah, oh, he's ruined it. Ah. Oh. And there's another moment of silence. And I'll be darned if the client didn't say, well, you know, for us to be a hero, we really have to get 1,400 people to attend this conference. And I thought, oh my gosh, we had thought of that. You know, we thought of all of the technical details, but oh my gosh, to get 1,400 people, we're going to have to do these other things. So we could have successfully delivered the conference technically and completely missed the boat. So we want to look at what are the outcomes and what is the value. Okay, now where that ties in is we identify stakeholders within the business and we explain the value of these little volunteer projects to them. So they know what kind of value this volunteer organization, what this volunteer group, what value this person within their organization is actually bringing to their organization as a volunteer. And that, again, it helps us to get volunteers, but it also helps the volunteers to get promotions, recognition, and all of that goodness that they deserve for having spent an hour or two or lunch or whatever to contribute. So does that
come on? This is probably a follow-on, but going a little deeper into that question, I'm really curious to hear more about incentives to get on these volunteer teams. Because a couple of the factors on the surface are there's a high level of rejection. If there are 500 volunteers for 12 slots, I could volunteer 5 or 6 times and not be chosen. I'm volunteering to help people I probably have never met, so there isn't, like, I really like Elizabeth, so I want to help her. So I'm wondering if the real incentive comes from the recognition at the end, and or is part of it the understanding that if I have a problem, I know that this process will be there for me. Or is it management support saying you should volunteer for this?
It's yes to all of it, and the management support is more or less. It really depends on what part of IBM and which particular manager we're talking about. I think it really goes beyond the recognition for why people want to participate. And if you have 500 people, there are a lot of people that aren't going to get to participate. But we are very much anti-click. I know early on we had clicks within the organization I'm in. You know, well, I know that these three people are really smart and they're going to deliver, so every opportunity that comes by, we'll give this over to you. But this is really sweet, you know, let's give this to you. That's not how we build a community. We try to get representatives from across the business, across roles, across geos, across cultures, and across, we put in managers and newbies, you know, on the same team. You know, if they have something, we look for complementary skills and talent to bring together, and we do not focus on the same exact people over and over and over again. Because if I give 12 new people an opportunity and they have a beautiful experience, they're going to share that out with their friends. So it's not only, you know, it's a matter of bringing together good people that have complementary skills and understanding that they're going to help you to promote and market
not just your community, but the solutions that they're developing. You know, they're building up awareness of the great stuff that they're producing so other teams can benefit from it. So it's, you know, it's yes, it's recognition. No, it's not place. I think the other piece here is that it is not just about bringing 12 people together to create a training course, you know, or to put together a conference. Actually, usually it's like 150 people to do a conference. But it's not just that. I mean, it's about building the bond between those people. When we start off a work group, we have everybody introduce each other. You know, who are you? Tell us a little bit about yourself. We make a big deal out of birthdays. You know, somebody had a promotion. Somebody's having trouble on the job. You know, they just had a 7-1. We're not going to see them this week. It's not just a name that didn't show up to the meeting. You know, it's your teammate. It's this person. And so it's this caring and building the connection between those people so that it's not just, you know, oh, I'm sitting on this. I'm going to check off my tasks. I did it. But so that, you know, they know Mingzhu in China just had a child. You know, so-and-so just sent a card. You know, we're celebrating together. 40% of IBMers on any day are working not in the office. And, you know, that means you're not seeing, you're not shaking hands, you're not, you know, hugging, you're not talking at the water cooler. The core, I think, and the heart of what we do is to build those relationships. And that's why the story plays. Because when you share your story and you make sure you bring out the stories from the people, you build those bonds and those connections. So I kind of abhor the word networking, because networking means you're establishing relationships to get somewhere. The relationship is secondary. And what we're really doing is we're saying, this is key and this is important.
What kinds of software ways do you bring people together, like your video conferences and your teamwork? Is it all like on Lotus Connect or whatever it is?
Yeah, this is kind of funny. Okay, so I try very much to make sure that we're using the technology that is appropriate for the situation, and that we don't use technology just because it's really cool to use the technology. Okay, so when we bring in external speakers, I'll give you an example. We could set up, you know, this, so that you can see their screen as they're flipping through the charts, or I can flip the charts for you, and we can see everybody that's connected up. And I can also tell you that I have seen many times where that blew up. You know, and so 10 minutes into the call, everybody's, oh, I can't get in, this isn't working. I think the low-tech route. Send out the presentation. Make sure you're, you know, it's not very sexy, but it works really, really well. We do use chat extensively. We make sure we have chat groups set up. We use email distribution lists. We use a forum, our communities. We have something called Lotus Connections Community that includes, you know, a forum, and you have little announcements, and a wiki, you know, for collaborative development. So we kind of pick and choose depending on what it is they're trying to solve. But it's not technology for the sake of, hey, this is really not cool technology. It's to make sure that we're trying to solve the problem. And I only say that because we often do go the lower tech route if it's, you know, if it's reasonable and we can still get the job done. Now, the Cognos are doing some really interesting stuff with video.
I'm sorry, the who?
Cognos. It's one group within IBM, one larger group. A lot of their calls, regular team calls, they're doing with video. So we try to make sure that it's going to work globally, and we try to make sure that it's as unobtrusive as possible. So, you know, I tend to be on the lower tech side. Wikis are great. It truly is collaborative. you know, if you really have 10 people that all want to work together and get a document, a wiki can be cool. But, you know, if you really find that it's really one person pulling the stuff together, then you don't really need a wiki. So just,
I think you're probably doing cooler stuff in the technology space than what I've used.
Is the community only IBM employees? Because yes. You mentioned it's volunteer. So interested to hear if you network with other communities or.
Yes and yes. So internally, you know, we have this QSC community of 8,400, and then parts of it will break off to focus on different things. Or, you know, we'll have people that are already in the community. We do a call, and people that didn't join the community volunteer and kind of become part of it. Recently, what we did when we were developing, the book is called A Practical Guide to Distributed Scrum. So we had internally teams develop a chapter at a time focusing on these different problems with working as distributed teams. Each chapter is a different sort of problem. Well, what we did was, we took that externally. We made those chapters available outside of IBM, and we started encouraging people to come, you know, take a look at this. Is this stupid? Does this make sense to you? Does it align with your experience? Do you have other stories that we can embed? And all threaded through it, there are a lot of IBMer stories, because there were a lot of us, but there are also stories from other people, you know, that we've brought in by meeting them at conferences or, that we pinged, you know, hey, I notice you're an expert on this topic. We'd love to get your thoughts. So in that way, we've made connections out. Mary Popendick has come in, and she's, you know, presented and shared her experiences as well. And, you know, so we try to build those connections more broadly. The thing is, if we only did it in IBM, we would be missing out on some pretty cool thoughts and experiences. So we want to build those connections, too.
Is it mandatory to communicate in English, or have you seen others develop into other languages, communities by language?
Yes, we do. We have a very powerful, we have communities focused in different countries as well. In China, we have three different labs, and we have right now I co-lead this community called the Agile Development Community. And we have, we actually have a very active Agile community, and the language that they use is Chinese. And I actually get copied on the communications out to that community. I cannot read them. But they're doing amazing things. And also, I really appreciate that you bring that up, because they are at the China Development Lab, right? They're doing some amazing things, and they need to have the ability to not be caught up in the right. We want for them to be able to move quickly and not have to constantly be translating. So we have some things that we do in English where we bring everything together. Sometimes they do things in Chinese, and then we get it translated back, you know, so that it's a benefit to the rest. But, you know, there's German, Russian, you name it. We have, communities like that. It's a balance. You know, how do you choose, you know, when you're going to communicate this out in one language versus the other? So we have a balance. Any other questions? I think I'm standing with some more lunch.